Hello, this is Sean Kennedy. I'm the Editor-in-Chief of the American Journal of Nursing.
This is Karen Rausch. I'm the Clinical Managing Editor.
We're here to present the highlights from our February 2014 issue. On the cover this month, we have a beautiful photo. It's from a celebrated photo essay called Nurse Midwife, which appeared in the December 1951 Life magazine. The photos are from Eugene Smith's collection. And it's really a photo essay about a nurse midwife, Maud Callan, who served thousands of poor patients in the rural South Carolina town of Pineville in the 1950s. The cover photo shows Callan departing a delivery in a small, poor shack. You can see quite a bit of detail in the photo. She served poor, mostly black community of Berkeley County. She drove an average of 36,000 miles each year and worked as much as 16 hours a day. Nurse midwives were rare at that time in the 1950s, with only 9 in South Carolina and 300 in the nation. After the piece in Life magazine was published, apparently subscribers from all over the country sent donations to help Callan, and she used the money to build a clinic in Pineville, where she worked until she retired in 1971. So it's a great cover, and we're very pleased to have it here, have it on AJN for Black History Month. We also pulled from our archives a piece written by Booker T. Washington, and it talks about training colored nurses back in the day. So those are our offerings for Black History Month.
The archive piece is a fascinating piece. It gives you a really good look at kind of the controversy that somewhat surrounded Booker T. Washington's approach to, you know, bettering the lives and the opportunities for black people back then. So I really encourage you to read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's we're fortunate to have some of these wonderful pieces in the AJN archives. So Karen, we have two CEs this month, and Karen will tell you about our original research piece.
So our original research is on changing trends in newly licensed RNs. And this is a research study that compared, I looked at data collected from two groups of newly licensed RNs, one from 2005 and one from 2011. And it found an interesting shift from the traditional work patterns of NLRNs. The later cohort were less likely to work in hospitals. They reported fewer job opportunities, which is probably not surprising to many people, knowing how the job market has changed for new grads out there. And in the second cohort, a greater number of them held a second job. This is research conducted by Dr. Kovner, and she's done a lot of work in the area of nursing workforce. So it gives a really interesting perspective of the changing picture of work jobs for new grads.
And the other CE offering we have this month is post-tonsillectomy pain in children. Now, it seemed that when this article came in, I thought, gee, post-tonsillectomy pain in children. It was ice cream and cold compresses. But there has recently, since we accepted the paper and started working on it, there was recently some changes in black box warnings by the CDC. The FDA, around use of narcotics and specifically codeine and Tylenol with children. So this article does cover that, and it's a good update. Tonsillectomy is very common, as most everyone will agree, and it treats a variety of disorders, not just a frequent throat infection, but also sleep apnea. Unfortunately, it also causes prolonged moderate to severe pain, as well as nausea and vomiting. This article does a great review. It talks about the physiology of pain and looks at the trajectory of pain, current findings on the efficacy of various pain management interventions, and does update, as I said, the guidelines and recommendations from the recent FDA warnings. But I think for nurses, it does a wonderful job of providing some strategies for what nurses need to teach both their patients and the families, the parents, about pain management and adherence to medication schedules to keep pain in control. And it does talk about some of those old-fashioned non-pharmacological methods like ice collars and ice cream and things, and some of which certainly haven't any evidence base to support them but are considered comfort measures. But it's a great article. Karen, we also have Cultivating Quality.
Yes, our Cultivating Quality piece this month is called The Sterile Cockpit, An Effective Approach to Reducing Medication Errors, as in a question. This was a group of nurses, bedside staff nurses, who noticed that they had a high rate of medication errors on their unit and decided to do something about that. And they, looked to the evidence and felt that interruptions during medication administration was a big culprit. So they put into place some measures to try to decrease medication interruptions. And the one that they used was what is called the sterile cockpit approach, because it's based on what they did in the airlines to increase safety. And they found it really didn't help. And so they made some changes. They got feedback from the nurses on the unit, made some changes, and hoped to see, that it would work better with the changes, but it really didn't work better. The nurses were still, the medication errors had gone down, but the nurses were still being interrupted. So there's a really great discussion in this article about, is this really a method that works in a busy, complex medical surgical unit on the hospital? Sometimes it's great to know what doesn't work and why, and kind of help move us towards finding the right way to approach a problem.
Yeah, I really like this article because while I'm sure everybody was disappointed that it didn't really improve or didn't work, I mean, this was a real world, this is a report of a real world issue. And I think a lot of units try things and they don't work and they think it's them, but they did everything right and did a great review of what might work or might not, and for different reasons. So I think it's a great piece to look at and just understand why it didn't work, so that when you're trying to do your own improvement, this offers valuable information. Another piece we have is Perspectives on Leadership, which is the column from the American Organization of Nurse Executives for Emerging Nurse Leaders. And this one is called Hard Facts About Soft Skills. We had a little trouble with the title because the soft skills really aren't soft. They're really important. While emphasis for nurses is often placed on the clinical skills, communication, collaboration are equally important, but a lot of times we think of these as soft skills. This article illustrates how one nursing unit changed its model of care to improve both nurses' ability to delegate and communicate among colleagues as well as nursing assistants. They had nursing assistants reporting to several different RNs, and they really looked at what the errors were, what the problems were, miscommunications and care being not given because the communication was missed, and they really streamlined their organizational and delegation process. So it's a nice article that really covers what a unit can do to improve things. So Karen, do you want to talk about our final article, the legal clinic?
We have a new column starting this month that it should be a really interesting column, a valuable column for nurses. It's actually the legal clinic column's been going on, but we have a new series starting in it, and it's a series that does reviews of true cases of medical malpractice suits. It's being authored by Edie Brow, who is our legal clinic coordinator, and each article in the series will describe the elements of a malpractice lawsuit and what lessons nurses can learn from the case. And it starts with a malpractice suit that revolves around an infant with a bad outcome, and the nurses are being sued because there was no documentation of ongoing assessment or follow-up for care for this infant. So this should be a really valuable series.
And we also have, of course, in the February issue, what we have in our all of our issues, we have editorial and a viewpoint. And this viewpoint is written by someone who feels that we need to be cognizant that hard of hearing is not deaf, and there is a difference. We also have AJN Reports, a really interesting one about a case that's being litigated now. It's a case where a family sued a hospital because they felt the nurse who died in a car accident was worked to death, and that the hospital was responsible for the nurse falling asleep at the wheel. We also have, of course, Art of Nursing Reflections. We have a Nursing Resources, which talks about ToxNet, which is a toxicology and environmental health information site of the NIH. And it's a great site where you can plug in different substances or materials and find out if they're toxic or if they are transmitted through breastfeeding. So it's very helpful if you work with nursing mothers. We also have Cochrane Corner and a profile of Michelle Mays, who's a nurse who works in war-torn countries. She just came back from Central African Republic and is now in Syria, so she's a young woman who's doing remarkable work. So we hope you take a peek at the issue, either in print or online or on the iPad, and let us know if there's anything you especially like or if you think you have some ideas that we should be looking at. Also, please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and our blog, ajnoffthecharts.com. You can email me, sean.kennedy@walterskluwer.com.
Or me, karen.rausch@walterskluwer.com.
So thank you for listening, and until the next time for the March issue, have a good month.